This is In Focus, the weekly public affairs program from KTBB and the Team Sports Radio, featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place.
Good morning and welcome to another episode of In Focus, heard weekends on KTBB 97.5 FM and KRWR, the Team 92.1 FM. Join us each week as we interview those who help Tyler and Longview residents make their lives better. As always, you can reach out with your thoughts on the show, simply going to ktbb.com/infocus. Today, my guest is Mary Jo Burgess. She's the executive director for CASA for Kids. Mary Jo, welcome to the show.
Thank you and good morning.
So what's going on with CASA?
So CASA stands for Court Appointed Special Advocates, and we work with abused and neglected children in Smith, Wood, and Van Zandt counties. And we are always looking for volunteer advocates who have a heart and passion for children and want to make a difference in the lives of those children who have been through horrific situations. You know, we have up to 200 volunteers at a time, and they come from all walks of life. They may be students in college. They may be retired. They may be professionals who have full-time jobs. So they're all walks of life, all industries, all economic, all geographic areas. So it's just someone who wants to make a difference in the life of a child and has just a little bit of time that they can give.
What kind of time are we talking about if someone wants to volunteer?
So it varies, and it is very flexible as well. The advocate will go visit the child in their temporary placement. That may be in the area around here, Smith County, East Texas, or it actually could be in San Antonio or Houston, wherever the child's placed. So we love it when someone comes in and says, you know, I've got family in Houston, so I would love to take a child that's placed in Houston, and CASA might even be able to help with the expenses to get there. So they go and they visit those children, put eyes on them, and then they take time to report and reflect on their observations, what they found when they were there, jotting down the facts of what was experienced. That goes to the judge. And then when the case goes to court, they actually go to court. So the amount of time can vary from month to month. It could be that you take a trip to wherever the child is placed, spend a couple hours. Or it could be if they're here locally, it just takes 30 minutes to go meet them for lunch at school or go see them on a weekend. So it's a very flexible schedule, except for when the case goes to the court.
Do the relationships usually extend past the interaction, the initial interaction, and the purpose of it, which is to be able to represent the child's best interest?
Yes, they do sometimes. The cases are normally to be disposed of or finished within a year. That doesn't always happen. Some cases are much shorter, and some can be up to several years. And often if a child ages out of foster care, which happens at the age of 18, then that advocate and that teenager or young adult may retain that relationship. And that is such a beautiful thing. Sometimes our advocates, after the case is over, even invite that young adult to spend holidays or come over, have a pool party. So it can extend beyond when we are officially have the case closed.
So I was wondering how it transfers from just being an observer to a mentor. You know, which is probably this child's going to be attracted to any person that gives them positive attention. Correct?
Yes, yes.
I mean, a relief for the child is what I'm saying, not attracted. I use wrong words, but just, you know, feel comfort with someone who actually is looking out for them. Do these children, they're already in the foster care program, so they're foster parents, their lives are too busy to adequately do what needs to be done as far as the court cases go?
Well, let's talk about them, because it could be a foster parent that has several children. It could be a kinship placement, which means it might be a grandparent. So you can imagine a grandparent who has already raised their children. They think they're done. They're living on a fixed income. And then all of a sudden, they have another child back at home. So often, whoever the placement is, we call them caregivers, do not have time to spend with the child. And so our volunteer advocates, they have a wealth of ideas and thoughts and creativity that they can do with the child. It's not just observing them. They do want to make sure that they're safe at their placement, but they can find what is the interest of this child. Do they want to go play soccer? Do they want to go McDonald's for lunch? What do they want to do? And spend some quality time. And so it is that relationship between observing and being a mentor and developing a strong bond that that child will remember years to come, and they do learn from the advocate how to trust again.
A lot of them lose that ability. If you're let down enough, it becomes very hard to trust.
Absolutely. Correct?
And I guess if you're in the foster program, in and of itself, it says that some of the people that you've trusted have either failed you or been taken from you, I guess, for one reason or the other, death, jail. What are some of the reasons that the children are in foster care?
Everything you just mentioned. Drugs often plays, you know, a crucial part.
The court removed them from the home.
Yes. So it's always that the court has discovered there's enough evidence of abuse or neglect that they're no longer safe in their home. And so several times parents are incarcerated. So maybe one parent's incarcerated, another one is just not able to maintain keeping up with them. And most often it's neglect. So you're seeing 10-year-olds that are taking care of younger siblings and trying to find food and trying to get them bathed into bed and back up in the mornings for school. So we often do see siblings trying to parent their other siblings.
Okay. That's untenable for a number of reasons, obviously. 10-year-old, older siblings have been watching younger siblings forever, but I think what you're talking about is it's way past looking after your brother and sister till your parents get home. This is the person, the 10-year-old that may be head of the household, for so to speak, and is having to take all those responsibilities on of cleaning, feeding, taking care of their younger siblings, correct?
Yes, and they're often even taking care of the parent as well.
So would, in a situation, would they be removed or their younger siblings?
All of them, because they're all being neglected.
And how often do you see whole families of children that get into the system like this?
All the time. That's more the case.
More the case?
Yes. It's usually the whole entire family, all the siblings.
And it... It's the wrong show to do if you're empathetic. I'm sorry. Sometimes I just pause. So, in that case, does CASA work to keep those children together?
We do. We help identify some possible placements. We aren't the placing agency, so it's not up to us, but we can certainly advocate. So when we visit a child, let's say they're in a temporary foster home, we start finding out, who did you spend Christmas with? Do you have uncles? Do you have aunts? So sometimes nobody knows who those possible relatives are. And we start finding that and then doing research and then recommending that there might be a relative who could be a good placement.
Take me on or show me, illustrate an example for me of what it would look like if I was a CASA volunteer and I got assigned to a case. How would I start? Take it from there.
Well, we can get you started today.
You know, I get asked a lot to volunteer. Obviously, I have a lot of 501(c)s that come in, nonprofits that come in. It's tough to find. For instance, I'm a believer, but I'm not probably a great example of someone to lead a kid spiritually. I'm more of a crazy uncle type that's a lot of fun and wants to engage, but there's areas that I don't think I have strengths. So there's some faith-based organizations that I would feel like maybe I wasn't a great fit, not because I'm not faithful, but just because I don't lead with it as far as that goes. But CASA is something that's always interested in me because I just think it's so needed. The judges, how much weight do the judges give the CASA volunteers in the court situation?
The judges listen to several people. They've got the attorneys. The child has an attorney ad litem. The right. parents have attorney ad litems. We have what we call For Kids for Families now, who is replaced.
Can you explain to the audience what an attorney ad litem means?
An attorney ad litem represents what the child's wishes are or what the parents' wishes are. And then the guardian ad litem, which is our role, represents the best interest of the party they're representing. So
they have their wish list and you have your reality check.
You could put it that way. Okay. Yes. So let's talk about that 10-year-old. That 10-year-old, he knew what life was like back at home. He misses mom. He wants to go back home to mom, even though those circumstances were horrific. So he tells his attorney, I want to go home. We know that mom is still on drugs. We know that mom has brought in, mom has a boyfriend in the home that's got pornography that's the 10-year-old is exposed to. We know all these situations. So we know it is not in the child's best interest for them to be reunified just yet.
But the child wants his mom.
Right. Okay. So the judge is listening to all the parties, and the judge has to weigh all these facts and all these recommendations to make the best decision for the child.
Because that's the idea. It's just to get them out of this mess alive.
Alive, right? and reaching their best interests.
Correct. I'm not going to fall into this again. So hypothetically,
you may not think so.
Hey, no, I'm. we'll say the person's name is Jane. Okay, Jane volunteers for CASA. Jane, what's her first step that she's going to do? I know you used to be located on Donnybrook, Donnybrook, but you moved, right?
We've moved twice.
You moved twice.
So now we are on a quiet little street called Westway, okay, over in East Tyler, mm-hmm, just off the loop by Highway 155.
Okay.
And on 4 beautiful, quiet acres.
Oh, wow.
So we love our building. But the first thing before we even make an assignment is we get to know the potential volunteer. Why do you want to do this? What are your skill sets? What are you thinking that this is going to be like? The expectations? What are you bringing to the table? And we do a very in-depth interview to make sure it's good for the volunteer and it's good for our organization. Then we do a criminal background check because we certainly can't have the volunteer be exposed to certain circumstances back in their history of criminal activity that would undermine their advocacy in court. Do the criminal background check, and then we put them through some wonderful training where they're exposed to different hypothetical cases. They learn about child development. They learn about the court system. They learn about child welfare, all the expectations of a volunteer and the support and resources that we're going to provide. After all that, they're sworn in by the judge. And then
as an officer of the court?
Well, they're sworn in by the judge to the role of the guardian ad litem.
Okay. All right.
And then we hand pick cases that we think this is the perfect volunteer for this child. We've listened to that volunteer throughout their training. We've learned what age they may be most interested in. We've learned about their background. Maybe for you, it was you loved playing basketball. And we've got a 13-year-old that he dreams of playing basketball. What a great icebreaker. What a great match to build a relationship from. So we match those things up, and then we sit down with the potential volunteer and say, we think we have the perfect case for you.
Right. Like for me, hypothetically, it could be like, I tend to like kids more from like 8 or 7 to 14. And then I don't like them as much when they're like 16, 17, when they can think for themselves. That would be, God, that's an impressionable zone of age right there. But that's who I think that I would enjoy spending the most time with, because even if their situation is dire, children want to believe. They want to think something's better, you know, and until the point that it's drummed in their head that it's not. Correct?
Yeah, that's actually the hardest age, those teenagers. And that's my affinity, too. I like that age group. But we all have that age that we think we connect the most with and could offer the most to.
I think I could connect with teenagers. I just think I'm a bit cynical. And these kids today... And I don't mean to disparage this group that we're talking about, but in general, I think emotionally they're pretty soft, you know, as compared to generations ago. They've gotten a lot of, everybody gets a trophy. They've gotten a lot. And I know these aren't these children, you know, we're talking about. But still, when I was a young person, adults would take shots at you or be disinterested in you and whatever. Not abusively speaking, but like I always tell people, my grandfather loved me to death. Never once looked at me and said, "How's your day?" Okay. He said, "This needs to be done. We need to go. Hey, good to see you. We need to go get started on the yard work." You know, never doing all right. And I think kids today are used to that. Sadly, the children we're talking about are not. They don't get that, or they wouldn't be in this position.
Right.
I think. What's been your hardest removal?
Oh, I don't know that I can answer that one. You know, we're not the ones who remove, so it's not up to us. But and I can't just handpick one situation. You know, that it could be a different one every day.
I misillustrated that, and I apologize. I know you don't do removals, but I was harking back to our first part of the conversation where the court actually removes the child from the family. So in some cases where if they need to, based on the CASA's input, correct?
We don't get involved until the child has been removed. So that's assigned.
Back to my question, what's your most successful case that you, not most, but just one that you can think of that, hey, this was a really great case. This was a CASA that fit, a representative that fit the child, and we did this.
Well, I'll tell you a fun story.
That'll work.
So about a year ago, I had a position open for a case supervisor, one of our paid staff that supervises our volunteers and also works directly with our children, and got several applications in, and one appealed to me. This young gentleman had received his master's at UT Tyler and was currently working in Houston, and had some interesting background experience that I thought was relevant. So we did a Zoom interview. This was, you know, still because he was in Houston. And initially, right off the bat, came to find out that he had been one of our former foster kids. So here he is, young 20s, went on. He and his brother were actually both in foster care together. He went on, got his master's degree, and was so successful in what he was doing and making so much money as a young 20s that I couldn't afford to hire him. But I was so impressed with what he had done and his commitment, how he was giving back to youth. And so we remain in contact with this young man. And he has done some volunteer work for us. He's actually going to be featured on a marketing story we're doing. And that just gives me goosebumps all over to hear what a success he has made, where when he was in foster care, he was involved in the juvenile justice system too. So with the help of his CASA advocate, she helped guide him into choosing good decisions like going to college, and helped him know that he could have hope, he could be successful, he could be whatever he wanted to be, and he is such a rising star. Just so proud of him.
Fantastic story. And it gives me, as we've drilled down a bit, I realize it's not just an interview and then seeing them from time to time, it's an introduction to the child that you begin a relationship with, right?
Because absolutely.
That's what this young man was mentored by someone in the CASA organization.
Yes.
That got his attention.
Yes.
So that actually interests me more as a human, more that you can be integrated and be a part of that child's development.
Yes.
And a positive development instead of a negative development. So I understand that a little better now. I think I had the impression that you were almost I know you represent the child, but a representative for the child in court, and that's it.
You know,
but that's not it.
You become their voice in court. Yeah. They're not going to court. Who's going to speak up for them? Who's going to tell their story? Who's going to tell when they're in school and, hey, by the way, they're doing better. They're attending school more often. Who's going to say this child needs some trauma-based counseling? Who's going to do that if it's not our volunteer advocates?
Nobody. Because it just at that point, the case becomes a number on the docket, right? Without representation.
Well,
it's just another case that goes by of another. I mean, sadly, this is daily.
It takes a village. It takes all of us doing our different roles. It takes CPS or now for Kids for Families. It takes the attorneys. It takes the judge.
And the village idiot has a role. I mean, let's not forget, you know, seriously, I mean, if he's not demented or, you know, criminal or anything like that, he's just weird. I think it's good that we expose, you know, children to people that are light. You know, not always heavy. Not everything's so heavy. Let's go out and let's joke a little bit. You know, I think I've found that some of the children, because I've worked with the East Texas Crisis Center, and I've found that the thing that breaks my heart is a lot of the kids, they can't laugh.
Yes.
They just can't laugh. They can't release enough to laugh because their situation so overburdens them that it takes a lot of the joy out of life. They're just trying to get by one day at a time.
Right.
And I'm not sure that there's, to me, anything more valuable than a good laugh, a relaxed good laugh about things, or just being relaxed enough that you can enjoy the moment with a smile or a laugh. So that would be something that you know, I would think would be very valuable to these children, is just downtime without, you know, talking about, you would want to hear all their issues, but at the same time, hey, let's go to a movie and, you know, not talk.
Yeah,
for 2 hours and get lost in fantasy.
It could be putting a puzzle together. It could be coloring.
I could do that.
Okay, playing Candyland.
Right.
You know, whatever it is, you start off with something safe. And during that, you would be surprised, you know, some of the things that come out. Often the kids tell us, make outcries about the situation they're in right there. In their temporary placements. So we routinely, sadly, make hotline reports about the placements.
Why are, you knew you went down this hole with me. Why are there bad foster homes? I don't get it.
You and me both.
Okay, what's the motivation to be a bad foster parent? If you're gonna do it, do some people just do it just for the money?
Yes.
How many kids would they be allowed to have?
It varies. It depends on the child's circumstances, how many that they're licensed to have. And it's not always foster homes that you typically think of, like a mom and dad that bring children to their home. It can be a residential center where this is what this center is set up to do, and they have staff.
Okay.
That are actually abusive. We've had kids that have made outcries that they're being groomed for sexual favors from other kids.
Within the system.
Within the
now
system.
That I get that. You've got a lot of troubled children. And, you know, their cortex hasn't formed. You know, they're not going to make all the right decisions. You know, and then you're surrounded by kids and other, you know, once you learn a behavior as a child, if you don't learn it's wrong, you know, you're going to continue it, right?
Right.
So I that's something I just don't. So how, as an advocate, if you went into a foster home, and you saw that the fostering parents, that their title,
yeah, caregivers or foster
caregivers,
parents,
yes. Let's go with that. A parent is kind of a high bar. Caregivers. Then you could tell the court, hey, that this is not some place you want to send the kids to, correct?
Well, let's say that they are on a visit, and you know, you get that spidey sense. There's something wrong. You explore it a little bit, and we don't do confrontational discussions with the children. We've built that relationship so they feel comfortable enough with sharing. It can be, hey, do you feel safe? And so let's say that they say they share something. So the volunteer is not alone in this situation. They immediately contact their paid case supervisor, who they work very closely on everything about the case. And together they determine, yes, there's enough here that we need to make a call to the hotline. And so we make that call, and then, you know, depending upon what was found, they investigate it and they may remove it. And this happens, you know, all across Texas, all the CASA networks. If we find something as a residential treatment center or a group foster home, we're going to share that with all of each other and say, if you've got kids placed here, you may want to go do a visit and check on the kids.
Okay. Let's, in the time we have left, you have an event coming up in October. Let's talk about that. As you're getting that, I want to give out your URL. It's CASA4KidsOfET.org.
Yes.
Correct? Again, one more time. It's CASA4KidsOfET.org. It's spelled out just like that.
So we have a fun event coming up in October. It's our annual fall fundraiser. This year we're doing It Takes a Village, back to what we talked about a little bit earlier, that it does take a village of all of us coming together. So it's open to the public. It's family friendly. It's an evening. It's October 15th. Starts at 5:30. Ends by 7:30. We have one of the biggest auctions in Tyler. So lots of good bargains. We have lots of fun for every age. We have DJ. We may have some jugglers or magicians or some other entertainment. Just a fun, casual, lots of great food time. And it's a great way for us to raise awareness about abuse and neglect in a fun way and raise a few dollars that help us.
Sorry.
Yeah, maybe I should have said just that.
I laugh at the oddest times. It's just a nervous laughter. I apologize. But yes, we'll make the best out of a bad situation.
Yeah,
what you're really saying.
Abuse and neglect is so dark that we like to take advantage of opportunities when we have them to be a little light.
Nothing's more heartbreaking than seeing a child where they think they have no value, or they think they have no way out, or that they make a difference at all. And that's what breaks my heart more than anything, is maybe just for those children to have mentors that say, hey, you're worth something. You could have a master's degree at 25 and make a really good living. You know, you don't know it yet. You've had no one tell you that there's a direction. No one help you. So, obviously, a very, very important role you play in these children's ability to get out and live a normal adulthood, if possible. Just having someone they can call, like a parent.
Yes.
You know, because it's always. Everybody needs a mom or dad to call. They don't always need a mom or dad all the time, but you always need one to reach out.
Yes.
You know, to. And so I want to thank you for your time today. Again, it's October 15th.
Yes.
Is that right? October 15th is the It Takes a Village.
Correct.
I know that you'll have good success with that. Again, the URL, one more time, is CASA4KidsOfET.org, and of course that's of East Texas. My guest has been Mary Jo Burgess. She's the executive director, and if anyone wants to volunteer, they can reach out to that URL or you directly.
Absolutely.
How would they reach out to you directly?
They can call our office at 903-597-597. 7725, and we'll be standing by waiting.
Thank you, Mary Jo.
In Focus is a weekly public affairs program featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place. In Focus is produced by KTBB and the Team Sports Radio, and we thank you for listening. Join us again next week.